the convergence of these texts, two principal biblical texts today from Ezekiel and John, with the events of recent history and recent times in our world, and dare I say in our lives, could not be more telling. There's a lot of death and despair. There's a lot of wailing and grieving in the text from John and Ezekiel. There's a lot of hopelessness, a lot of dry bones. And how is one to preach to that? Could we have a hint that the same way to preach into this particular context comes from also paying attention to the context of our world and of our lives? I don't need to remind you that over the past few weeks we have witnessed the stench of death and violence and destruction. From the tsunami and nuclear accident in Japan, tens of thousands missing, dead. In the streets of Libya and Afghanistan and Ivory Coast and Democratic Republic of Congo, to name but a few. Death, dry bones, despair, violence, grief. But I dare say, because I know that you, like me, as human beings, encounter geography of grief as well in the landscape of our own soul and life. It may be right now that some of you are going through deep corridors and valleys of oppression and pain, of sadness and despair. So there is this call and response going on between the world events and our own lives. My own life is no different. A week ago today, this Sabbath week that we had set aside at Parkdale, April 3rd, began with a memory of that despair and grief. That was 35 years to the day that my brother was murdered. This past week, on April 7th, the 17th anniversary of the genocide in Rwanda, the correspondence of personal turmoil and pain and global reality continues to reverberate in stereo. Such is the correspondence between these texts and also our lives. The people of Israel have experienced a second wave of deportation. The Babylonians have come in 597 and taken away the chief, bright, able-bodied and educated classes of Jerusalem and deported them into Babylon. Among them was this priest of the temple named Ezekiel. Ezekiel witnessed that personal despair, personal trauma, as well as the people who could not, as the psalmists say, sing the Lord's song in a foreign land. 10 years later, as the people that had remained in Jerusalem rebelled again against the Babylonians, this time they were more devastating. For they came back again, decimated and destroyed the temple and carted off thousands more into exile. Gone was their place of worship. Gone were they dispossessed from their land. Gone was their identity. They were in the depths of despair. Right to the bone, this experience had cut them, in an expression that we use. Hence the language, the valley of the dry bones. We learn as we read that text that it is about the despair and the utter hopelessness that the people are undergoing that has occasioned this vision that God gives to Ezekiel. In the story in Lazarus, it is about one who experiences that death, but others who bear the grief of it. This correspondence between communal and global and individual is meant for us to pay attention to it all. And yet in the midst of it, we see God's invitation to be faithful. Why? I'll answer in a few moments. I want to invite Doretta to come and to summon up from our being that which we too grieve and that which we too are invited to in the way of hope and faithfulness.
This life can often be so cruel. Some days I'm also tired of trying to do everything expected of me. Where is my light? Where is my joy? Who has my heart? Where is my destiny?
I've wandered this earth looking for a sign that somewhere out there, the great divine is out there, somewhere watching over me. But sometimes it's hard to believe in the things that I can't see. I know my friends. I know my family. I know the things that I've built with my own hands. My money, my life, my riches, gone. I filled my life with the things of this life and I felt full, full of pride, full with ego, full of prestige. And I was still empty.
Some experiences break me down. I don't know who to turn to. Friends, they come and friends, they go. They take a piece of me. How can I pray? It has been so long. I don't know what to say. What if I get it wrong?
I pray for a sign that there's still hope for a coward like me, who filled up on material things as my identity, who took the easy way, who forgot how to pray, who filled up life with things that are meaningless and shallow. I lost who I was. I lost track of who to follow. But it was never about who, was it, God? It was always about you. Without faith, without purpose, without hope, I had everything and still felt the same. So I'm going to try putting faith beside my name.
If I ever lose my faith in you, oh, I pray that you will take my hand and lead me back to you. And if I ever lose my faith in all God's done for me, remind me, God, of all your love and who I'm meant to be. And I'm grateful you never lost your faith in me.
I built my castle on this earth and it crumbled to the ground. Tomorrow's a new day. God, I have faith that you can turn my life around.
If I ever lose my faith in you, oh, I pray that you will take my hand and lead me back to you. And if I ever lose my faith in all God's done for me, remind me, God, of all your love and who I'm meant to be. And I'm grateful you never lost your faith in me. Whoa. Faithful I will be.
Amen. And this is what Jesus was saying to the people who had gathered around that family whom Jesus loved, Mary, Martha, and Lazarus, over and over again. I am the resurrection and the life. Believe in me. The people had lost sight of what it was that God could do that was seemingly impossible, but possible in their lives, bringing life out of death in their experience. And God was clear to make sure that it was evident in the way in which Jesus taught and loved. Jesus wept. Let me ask you, have you ever felt that space in this text? The space between being alerted of deep pain and danger and waiting. It always bothered me. Why did Jesus wait when he heard Lazarus was sick? Why did he wait? The word there is meno, abide, purposely deciding not to go. Have you felt that way sometimes in your pleas and cries to God? either for the world or your own life, something you're going through. Why are you waiting? Why, oh God, why don't you answer me now? What's taking you so long? Jesus answers with his indignation at death. Jesus answers with the sorrowful way in which he experiences the people who have forgotten that with God all things are possible, but possible according to God's will. The dry bones of their despair and grief, Jesus preaches his life into it. As Doretta sang, we may have given up on our own house of cards that has fallen by our own construction, but God has not given up on us. And this is what God said to the prophet Ezekiel to speak. Ezekiel, his very name means God strengthens. And while the people were at the depths of their despair, God calls Ezekiel and tells him what to say three times. Says, prophesy. Prophesy to the bones, prophesy to the circle and geography of despair that they will be life. Why? Because I will bring breath into them. Tell them that I am a possibility person. Tell them that I can make what others cannot make. And then he tells them to prophesy to the wind, to the ruach, the breath of God and the wind that reminds us of the original story of creation, and breathe into these bones as they come together with sinews and flesh but cannot move because they are absent from the breath of God. Prophesy, breathe breath into them. And the third time he tells them, prophesy to the people who are despairing. They said, we are in essence undone. Our bones are dry. We have no hope. No hope. Prophesy and tell them, I will bring them out of that which entombs them and return them to a confidence in faith and a place of identity. That same promise, I suggest to you, brothers and sisters, is available to us. Whatever entombs you and me at this present moment, whatever it is that causes our bones to be dry and desiccated and absolutely lifeless, God can breathe life into it. There have been ample examples this past week again. We already mentioned those of mayhem and death, but also of hope and examples of the breath of God. On Thursday, we had an opportunity again as I supported Barbara in the proclamation of the gospel at the funeral of Vivian Osterhout, reminding those who gathered about this God of resurrection, this God for whom death is not powerful enough to overcome. I was at a conference for 2 days speaking in Burlington to a group of young United Church ministers, a time of renewal and refreshment. And even as a keynote speaker during a time of worship, there was an invitation for us to unburden ourselves and to have someone else pray for me. And I tell you, the last few weeks have been particularly burdensome in many ways. And I knelt there before this person, anointed my head with oil, and there was such a release, such a breath of hope, such a breath of God. Just yesterday, Barbara and Heather and I were among about 150 people gathering at St. Paul's to witness the showing of the two films, The Imam and the Pastor, the story of a Muslim and a Christian in northern Nigeria who have come together beyond their strife and their violence to speak out against the strife and the violence among the community and to bring healing and reconciliation. In the second film, which was the first time showing, The African Answer, 10 years later, this same duo, the imam and the pastor, invited to come to Kenya to deal with the strife between the Kalenjins and the Kikuyu in Burnt Forest in the western part, offshoots of the last election. and their word of testimony and their word of peacemaking and justice seeking insinuated itself into the midst of that strife and blew the breath of God into the dry bones of hatred. We were reminded of a Rwandan, of the hope that has come forth from that country, not only for the country but for the world, of tremendous testimonies of those who perpetrated killing and murder and mayhem on others, how the families and communities are reconciling through truth-telling and justice-making and reconciliation and forgiveness. The dry bones of entombment that keep us personally and as communities and as a world completely ensnared by violence and death and sin and grief. There are occasions, multiple and ample, where the Spirit of God is breathed into them, releasing individuals, communities, and nations from their predilection for despair and pain. There was a telling statement by the Deputy Minister of Nigeria who was in attendance, and she had not seen either of the films. And it so happened that one of the locations where this animation and peacemaking and rapprochement was taking place was in her hometown, Shendoa. And she recognized in the film faces that she knew. Some were her own family. And she told the gathering there that she had carried this grudge, she had carried this pain, and after seeing the film, for the very first time since this has happened, she was able to let it go. New life, restoration in the midst of desiccated bones and pain. My prayer is that you and I would bear witness to how God is breathing into your life and into the world. Bear testimony not only to the gloom and despair as we come alongside people, but also testimony to the faith that occasions the kind of vision that sees where God is at work in breathing new life. So I am only tasked with preaching to dry bones that which God is already doing. Notice it. Bear witness to it. For it is all around. This baptism today reminds us that there are others who have dedicated themselves, have been recruited into the community of followers of Jesus, will be trained and brought up and taught to be instruments of compassion and forgiveness, of peacemaking, of justice seeking, of reconciliation. So there's hope all around. Hope abounds. Thanks be to God. Amen.